Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to Reading Heathens, the unholy and wholly uninformed Bible study podcast. I'm your host, Adam B., here with your other host, Daniel T. How you doing, Daniel?
Doing great, Adam. I always say I'm doing great, but, you know, for the most part, every time I am doing great.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, for the most part, it's always a lie.
Sometimes it's a lie. I'm actually really enjoying doing them late at night. That's by no means saying that I ever want to do them late at night on a Sunday.
Who is them, Daniel?
Do them like, I don't, like podcast episodes. I don't know.
Oh, you mean you like doing the podcast late at night?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because out of context, if someone just listened to this episode, you were just saying you like doing them late at night.
Yeah, no. I only do the dirty late at night. I'm not a good, you know, morning dirty person. You know, it's a...
Where is this conversation going?
That's the voice of our wonderful, and can you pick another word for me?
No, you wanted to introduce me.
You know what? I'm just going to go with wonderful. That's the voice of our wonderful producer, Paulette. Welcome back to the show, Paulette.
Hey, Paulette.
It's an honor to be here.
Paulette has been editing and fixing the podcast for a while now. That's why it's better. But I haven't been produced live before. And I think Daniel and I just experienced it.
Well, here's something that I, you know, recently I did a long stream where I listened to a lot of our episodes, and I was kind of flabbergasted by how long we've been on. We were doing this in August, and we were on episode like 10 or 11, and Paulette was on, and I don't remember if we spoke to Paulette about her history with the Bible, I didn't even ask her if she wants to chat about it. Anyways, and it's usually the second episode, Paul. That's where I remember to ask somebody what their history with where the text is.
I guess my history with text must be just, well, the Torah, but from my Wednesday night Hebrew classes that I would go to at the Reform congregation in my hometown growing up. And it was like, you knew who everybody was in town that was Jewish, and we would all meet up Wednesday nights, and it was super kickback, relaxed, Reformed, where like, what I really appreciated, it was very liberal feeling, but they also were like, you know, God can prove himself to you. If you don't have to believe in God until he proves himself to you, and we're just going to read the text and see what applies to you, and you take or leave whatever you want. But this one, the thing that's interesting about this particular text itself is that the history of the holiday Passover, one of the highlights is you have to repeat it to the younger child. So like they make a big deal about at Passover dinner, the youngest child at the table has these set of questions that they have to ask, and the oldest, all the elders have to answer it. So they make a big deal about this is a very important story. It's the liberation of the Jewish people leaving Egypt.
Yeah, if you're just joining us, you know, picked a great spot, Exodus 7. we're currently focusing on Moses, and him getting his people out of Egypt is the story of Passover. Do you know what specifically Passover begins with? Do you tell the whole story of Moses?
Mm-hmm.
During Passover?
You start with, well, they make, yes, you start with Moses seeing the burning bush.
Okay.
And being chosen and talked to and convinced to go to the Pharaoh, which is where we are right now,
uh-huh,
to have faith in this Lord. So, quote unquote. Is it in quotes?
It's only in quotes if you want it to be.
But yes.
Well, I mean, that's the name he goes by anyways. But anyhow, you go from the burning bush to through the whole story, or at least broadly.
Yeah, she's trying not to spoil it.
I don't want to spoil it. This is epic. Plagues.
I feel you. Well, I thought it was kind of...
Wait, you just spoiled it.
I'll edit it.
but that's very interesting. Something I've always been... And you can correct me if I'm wrong. When I was growing up, and especially in the latter years of my attending a Baptist church, it was definitely a situation where the conversation was centered around what you believe and what you're supposed to believe. There was a lot of debate between denominations on like salvation and like what the text means and like what this means and like that kind of thing. And I always appreciated or kind of like, I don't know, thought it would be fun to be part of the Jewish faith where it like, it just seems like the culture around it, like my average Jewish friend seemed like it was less likely to be shunned by the family.
Whoa, wait, you had Jewish friends growing up in small town Arkansas?
No, I meant when I went to college.
Okay.
There's also, that touches on something interesting, because then you have people who are like religiously Jewish, and then you have people who are culturally Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that happens more and more, that they're just culturally Jewish. They don't go to temple all the time. They're not the like super religious, not driving a car, not turning on lights on Shabbat. But it's more just, we make sure we follow the holidays. We make sure that, yeah, that's it. We just follow the holidays. You drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Purim is actually, this Friday is Purim, which is the holiday where you just kind of drink and get drunk and you're merry and you wear a costume.
Oh.
It has a totally different, like, if you read the Torah, like, why that happens, it's kind of a little dark, but the generalness of Purim is that you wear a costume and get drunk. Oh, why? Because Esther had to convince a king not to kill all the Jewish people.
Adam, I'm seeing, if I'm assuming that story comes up in the Christian
Esther
version. So if we make it there, we should get drunk and wear costumes.
Oh, it definitely does, and I'm sure we will.
I don't know. That the Christian looking from the outside in, I always kind of admired at least the idea of being able to call myself a Christian and not have to, you know, follow things so strictly. In the latter years of my Christianity, it just seemed nice if I could have been. It could have lived that way, you know. It's almost like you're all in as a Christian, you're all out, you know, that kind
of
thing.
I remember a friend of mine, he would go to Reform Jewish temple. He would go to temple with the Reform. Would you say reformed Jews?
I don't know either.
Anyway, he wanted me to go to temple with the one of the more liberal temples in town, and it seemed pretty rad, but I didn't go because I was lazy and hungover. Let's get into the Bible. I'm lost and I need its guidance. Today we're doing Exodus 7. I'm going to read it out of the New International Version because, as previously stated, given up on the WEB. So this is chapter 7, picking back up with Moses. He's just kind of failed to convince Pharaoh to let his people go, and now he's going to give it another shot, I think. Then the Lord said to Moses, "See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron will be your prophet. You are to say everything I command you, and your brother Aaron is to tell Pharaoh to let the Israelites go out of his country. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in Egypt, he will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt with mighty acts of judgment, and I will bring out my divisions, my people, the Israelites. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites out of it." Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord commanded them. Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh.
Oh, dear.
So this is this thing that keeps happening. Or I brought it up a lot of times, that God is going to harden Pharaoh's heart.
We heard the song.
What song?
That's a song in Prince of Egypt. That's what Haley said in the last episode. Yeah. Or like, it's like straight up quoted out of the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I believe that. I just haven't actually heard that song. Haley may have mentioned it, but I do not remember it.
I remember only because of listening to that episode today. It's so weird, right? It's another one of those situations, to me, kind of similar to when God like just randomly made everybody racist in the Tower of Babel. You know, it's just like one of those moments where it's like you're truly supposed to just assume the Lord has his own plan.
Well, this... you can say the Lord works in mysterious ways, and there are reasons for suffering that lead to a better life for people eventually, or fulfill God's plan. This one has always really bothered me, though, because it's taking someone who decides to relent to God's will, or at least his will as expressed by his prophets, and God then changes his free will and his action as a human and is like, nope, I'm going to change your mind. So a lot of like Christian denominations argue about fate and, you know, if you're destined to go to heaven or if you control your path. And so I was always really, you know, resistant to the idea that everything was preordained and predetermined. So this always bothered me growing up. Like, oh, the bad guy is trying to like give in in, and then God is going to, like, twist the knife a little bit and make things worse.
Yeah, he's almost doing this on purpose.
Oh, yeah. God's really ready to get some action heating up.
But also, God just wants to see his snake staff do something. It's like he went through all this trouble to create a snake staff. You know, it's not like he just wants them to go to Pharaoh the first time and it works. They got to do his magic tricks. You know?
Well, Daniel, you stole the thunder out of it, but I'm going to pick up with verse 8. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Perform a miracle,' then say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it will become a snake.'" So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron threw his staff down in front of Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. Pharaoh then summoned his wise men and sorcerers, and the Egyptian magicians also did the same thing by their secret art. Each one threw down his staff and it became a snake, but Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard and he would not listen to them, just as the Lord had said.
Oh, damn.
It's a cool story. And my favorite thing about it, reading it in the Bible, is that, you know, in the movie version of The Prince of Egypt, the magicians are doing all these, like Moses will do these big miracles, and then the magicians of the court will do like a cheap, crappy version. You know, like it'll obviously be fake, like a fake snake or something. But in the Bible, it just reads like, nah, these Egyptian magicians know how to do the same exact thing God knows how to do.
Yeah, it's making it seem like it's not that special, but the only thing that makes it special is that even though these magicians throw out two snakes, Aaron's staff eats up these two snakes. And I remember seeing that in like some cartoon. I don't know if that was Prince of Egypt, but I definitely do remember that graphic.
It's a pretty cool image. God's snake eating just up the other snakes. Just chomping on them.
It is funny. In the Quest Bible, it tries to explain this phenomenon, like why were they able to also make their own snakes? And
yeah.
The Quest Bible says it could have just been trickery, you know, sleight of hand, whatever magicians normally do, some Penn and Teller nonsense, they say. But it also, they say that it could be demons, you know, like demonic or occult powers.
Ooh.
So like the Quest Bible said, like, and this is also a lot of, you know, people from from my church would also bring up demons every now and again.
Oh, I did not grow up, like, the Methodist church doesn't talk about demons a lot, not much of the supernatural, but this is the first time we're starting to dabble into that, maybe with the Bible then, or at least the Quest Bible's trying to convince us. I'm looking forward to
I want
more
some
of that.
Demons to be around.
Just like a ghost, if you saw a demon, would you fight them or freeze for
I
a
would,
second, Daniel?
Look, I'll fight a ghost. I'm not fighting a demon, alright? Alright, there was a young man in our church named Jacob, coincidentally enough, who everyone at one point said saw a demon. And we were just like, what the fuck? Jacob saw a demon? And we're just like, that's fucking scary shit. And then we were scared from that moment on. of demons.
If I see a demon, I'm just gonna get the teach me how to play guitar really well deal. Like, hey, Mr. Demon, I'm ready. Take my soul. Make me the best guitar player. And then, you know, I'll be moderately successful because rock and roll is dead. But I think we're gonna learn that the scariest thing right now is the Lord, because the heading above verse 14 in my Bible is the plague of blood.
The plague!
Yeah.
So this is the first. This is a spoiler. I think it's okay to spoil. There are going to be more than one plague.
The Lord's not just going to stop with, you know, one plague.
No, he gets creative.
Then the Lord said to Moses, "Pharaoh's heart is unyielding. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he goes out to the river. Confront him on the bank of the Nile and take in your hand the staff that was changed into a snake. Then say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to say to you, let my people go, so they may worship me in the wilderness. But until now you have not listened. This is what the Lord says. By this you will know that I am the Lord. With the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water of the Nile, and it will be changed into blood. The fish in the Nile will die, and the river will stink. The Egyptians will not be able to drink its water.' The Lord said to Moses, 'Tell Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the streams and canals, over the ponds, ponds and all the reservoirs, and they will turn to blood. Blood will be everywhere in Egypt, even in vessels of wood and stone. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord had commanded. He raised his staff in the presence of the Pharaoh and his officials and struck the water of the Nile, and all the water was changed into blood. The fish in the Nile died, and the river smelled so bad that the Egyptians could not drink its water. Blood was everywhere in Egypt. But the Egyptian magicians, that's great, the Egyptian magicians did the same thing by their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen to Moses and Aaron just as the Lord had said. Instead, he turned and went into his palace and did not take even this into his heart. And all the Egyptians dug along the Nile to get drinking water because they could not drink the water of the river. And this is odd. There's one more verse in this chapter, verse 25, and above it I have a heading that says the plague of frogs. And the verse just says 7 days passed after the Lord struck the Nile, and that's the end of the chapter.
That's a cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, dude.
Is there 7 days passed and then the frogs came? I mean,
we'll have to find out on the next episode.
I mean, we know by the title that the next plague is the plague of the frogs.
So I mean, it could be a trick.
Is the Bible known for doing this? Cliffhangers and twists like this? So we've got that the first two plagues so far is blood, all the rivers and all the water turned to blood, and then it killed all the fish in there and it made it stink, and then apparently, possibly, the second one is frogs.
Yeah, but let's not focus on the frogs.
And then the frog. No.
We got a lot going on with the blood. I will say the secret magic that the magician.
I know, yeah.
It's like
secret art. Yeah, not secret magic. Arts.
Well, earlier they said magicians.
Egyptian magicians.
I don't even know what you guys are correcting me on right now.
This part, it says secret arts, not secret magic. It,
oh, okay. I wasn't trying to directly quote it, but all I'm trying to say is how can they do the same thing that Moses did if Moses just turned all the water sources in Egypt into blood?
Agreed. I reread that thinking like, oh, did the secret art, that they also take water and turn it into blood in front of the Pharaoh to be like, look, we can also do that. And then the Pharaoh was like, see, I'm unimpressed.
Well, where did they even get water to turn into blood?
Maybe there was...
I guess some of the dug, the
yeah,
dug...
Yeah, there might have been water like wells. In a cup next to
no,
him.
No, because it says the cups.
Everything in the cups
everything
too?
Everything in the vessels of wood and stone turned to blood. But what they did is they dug trenches along the Nile so the water filtered mm-hmm. through. Like the groundwater was still clean. But in the Prince of Egypt, I remember they basically just pour Kool-Aid into water and stir it up. And they're like, see? It's red.
Kool-Aid. Yeah.
And they depict it as being very thin in comparison to
yeah. the blood. Yeah, well, the old Quest Bible, they say that some believe it was literally blood, and others believe that it was just red-colored soil deposits that turned the water to the color of blood.
Wait, what is the Quest Bible doing? That's yeah. some bullshit.
That's some science.
Daniel, and also, we can't use the Quest Bible every single episode. Oh, I love them.
Well, now that you've said that you love them, now
I'm
we're
sure
just...
they love us too.
We're the only ones who have the Quest Bible. But anyways, what I'm saying is that nobody knows, it's definitely to me it points out the hardening of the heart situation where the magicians were able to do some, you know, trickery, some demonic trickery, and Pharaoh is still mm-hmm. just like, nah, I'm good, I'm gonna keep all my slaves.
Well, here's my problem. Listen, I've always been even when I was a Christian and like a very active Christian, I was like, okay, the Bible isn't literal. So sure, maybe like science points to there were mud deposits that turned the water red or whatever, but no, not in this case. If you're saying you're a Christian and you believe this story, this is very specifically all the water turned to mm-hmm. blood. It's not fucking around with anything
else. I mean,
else.
Yes, the words are the words.
The Quest Bible is betraying us. The Quest Bible is constantly defending slavery, and now it's going to be like, maybe it was just mud in the water.
I mean, look, that's the Quest Bible, but I also think that the Quest Bible is not that far off from what a modern Christian would, like a Christian scholar would say. That's why I like it so much.
I mean, I just do appreciate it's bringing in like this is a possibility of why this happened. Just a little science.
I mean, listen, it was my idea to use the Quest Bible. This is the Bible I used in my adolescence. science, like, I appreciate it too. I'm just saying that's some some bullshit. Because the science of all of this is that it never happened. the history of this is that it did not happen.
Or
most
the
likely.
History is that something very similar happened, but it got super exaggerated. Like, every river turned red when it was just like one bank.
No, I mean the whole story of Exodus. At least I did some research on the book of Exodus, and modern historians who aren't religious are like, nah, there's no evidence for any mass exodus out of Egypt of any kind of slaves. That I don't know why that bothers me so much. I apologize. I'll shut up.
Well,
that's a valid feeling.
No,
it's okay.
It is weird. It's also I think between the two of us, it is hard to not be like, look, that's the text. You have if we're going to argue about the beliefs and non-beliefs of this text, we have to take it at its words. Like, some editorializing. Like, I think we both are very adverse to editorializing, like, what the Bible says or what it doesn't say. Like, it says what it says, you know, and that's the story.
Well, we never really talked about Genesis, and like, I've always, when I believed that Genesis was a metaphor for creation. And like, all of this was just like a non-literal like progression, and I believe that even about like this story. But I would rather believe abstractly that the plagues are like this story that's not necessarily like written down true, than be like, no, God didn't turn all the water in Egypt into blood. But you know what he did do? He put a little clay in all the water.
Okay.
And like, that's just as stupid. Like, I don't
okay.
it doesn't help anything. No, I want the metal version of the story where God hardens Pharaoh's heart and turns all the water into literal blood. Like,
okay, yeah. We'll stick to blood.
I like the blood too. Makes me this make it pretty hard. And the frogs, I know it hasn't happened yet, but I do like the idea of raining frogs down.
And we might, I mean,
well, I think you might be disappointed, actually, if that's the specific imagery you
want. Yeah, because I never read this part of the Bible ever, so I don't know what happens.
Well, we'll get there on the next episode. But for now, I think we should give this thing some ratings. And I'm going to go last because I'm fired up and I've been talking a lot.
Okay, I'll go first because I went last time. Since this is the beginning of Passover, essentially, I'm very excited for this. I feel like my rating is influenced because I'm so excited for the next couple chapters and how this will wrap up all together. So I'm going to give it 3 frogs.
Nice. Oh, no.
Daniel?
Are the police coming for us?
No, yeah, just for our neighborhood.
Yeah, we got a little police.
They're really excited about my review.
They're coming after you, Paulette, because you rated the blood chapter with frogs.
I was really excited about the frogs.
No, I mean, listen, honestly, we don't have very many like serious conversations about the actual Bible on this show. So, or like in its meaning and things in that nature. So, I'm excited. I love Exodus. I got a little worried going into a new book because I didn't know what it was going to mean. You know, there's always those stories of everything in the Old Testament just being names and other things of that nature. So, I'm digging this. I'm in it. This is like when we first started reading about Abraham. It's just an exciting moment. So I'm going to give this a solid 3.5 bloods.
I want to up mine. Now I got 3 frogs in a pool of blood. So it's kind of like a 3.5.
That's fair. I'm tempted to give this chapter and many more to follow just straight up 5s.
Ooh.
Because this is really, as far as I remember the Bible, this is peak Bible to me. Like, I love the magic. We got snakes eating snakes. We got staffs and magicians.
Egyptian magician.
We got the Lord hardening people's hearts. More importantly, we have some of the most metal imagery in any like religious myth that I'm familiar with. I'm sure this may be stolen from some other old book, as apparently a lot of the Bible is. Like, but God turning every bit of water into blood, that's a 4 for me. I might regret not giving it a 4.5 later. But because we got more to come, clearly frogs up next. I'll give this a 4.
I mean, who knows? Tune in.
I'll give it a 4 vases brimming with blood. They're just about to spill over into five territory.
Well, fuck yeah.
Well, great. Paulette, thank you so much for guesting on the show.
Thanks for letting me be a part of it.
You are the most important part of it for cleaning this up.
I mean, I'm clearly honored. And clearly for your using your preface. Sorry, guys. It's late. Precious time off to come on the show.
No, I'm really excited. I love it. Whenever I listen to you guys, I'm always like responding back. So I finally get to be a part of it.
Well, feel free to leave an editor's note on the end of each episode that corrects us.
Today, that might be helpful. Note, wait, I want to say sorry for Daniel's comment on this. Sorry for Adam's comment on that.
That would be helpful. I'd really appreciate that. In fact, if you could just follow me around in life and do that.
Nope. I need you to own your words.
Just every random person Adam interacts with, there's a Paulette. Ooh, that's a good Black Mirror episode where there's a robot that is like someone similar in your life who will just come up to a person and be like, I'm sorry, he's not good with people. Here's what he really meant. Okay, have a good day.
Sounds like a digital Aaron, Daniel.
Yeah, we all need a digital Aaron, brother Aaron.
Well, everybody, please send us an email, hostedpod@gmail.com. We'll send you a Reading Heathens coin, 3D printed by Daniel himself, if you send us anything to that email. We'll send you 3 coins if it's a nice big old dick pic. Follow us on Instagram @hostedpod, and we'll see you for the next episode of Reading Heathens on whatever comes next. If this is a Sunday, we'll send it out on Wednesday. If this is a Wednesday, we'll send it out on Sunday. Bye-bye.
Bye. You can be our
acolyte. But first, boy, it's time to bow. Or it's your own grave you'll dig. Or you're playing with the big boys. Playing with the big boys.